Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Lord of the Rings AMA podcast. My name is Matthias Austin, and on this podcast, I invite you to ask me anything about Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, or anything related to the greater legendarium of J.R.R. Tolkien, and I will do my best to give you as in-depth an answer as I can. And if you want to submit a question, you can email me at lotramapod@gmail.com. And just a reminder that even if you don't think your question merits a lot of in-depth answering, if I get a lot of sort of smaller questions, I'm going to put them together as a mailbag episode. So send in anything you have to lotramapod@gmail.com, just like this week's question asker, Lydia from San Diego. Lydia asks, what took Aragorn so long to be king? In the movies, it depicts him as reluctant, but in the books, as you mentioned previously, he's stoked to be king. Thank you, Lydia, for that question. I think the way that I want to approach this is by first looking at his ancestry to determine why he, as the heir of Isildur, the rightful heir to the throne as we see in Lord of the Rings, why wasn't he already the king? Then we're going to talk about what he was doing in his own life, in the life of Aragorn, prior to the start of the Lord of the Rings that might have caused him to have this delay in becoming king. And then I'm going to finish up by just briefly talking about the differences between book Aragorn and movie Aragorn. I'd also like to warn everybody in advance. This is going to be the type of episode with a lot of names and dates. So I'm going to be putting links in the show notes for timelines and genealogies that you can reference as we go along to kind of keep track of things. So let's start. If Aragorn is the heir of Isildur, and the heir of Isildur is the rightful king of Gondor, why isn't he already on the throne? I'm going to go over a few things I said in the second episode of the podcast about Denethor, so bear with me if you heard some of this before. In the Second Age of Middle-earth, and Lord of the Rings takes place in the Third Age, there were three houses of men who aided the elves and the Valar, and if you're not sure who the Valar are, check out episode 3 on the creation mythology of Middle-earth. So these three houses of men helped the elves and the Valar defeat Morgoth at the end of the First Age. And, okay, I'm gonna say this up top, too. It is just easier for me to say elves and men. But I just want you all to know, men is not just males. It's just, like, humanity. The Tolkien would do that. He would use humans. Instead of saying humans, he would say men. There were actually many important women involved in all of these stories, despite what some critics of Tolkien may say, but men is just easier to say quickly than elves and humans or elves and humanity, so I'm going to be saying men the way that Tolkien would, but please know that this also is inclusive of women. Okay, so anyway, third time we're going to get going with this, let's get started. So the three houses of men fought alongside the elves and the Valar when Morgoth was overthrown. And those houses of men were rewarded for their support by being granted an island kingdom between Middle-earth and Valinor. And this was called Numenor, and they became the Numenorians. And the first Numenorian king was Elros, who was the twin brother of Elrond. Elrond and Elros were both given a choice because they had a mixed heritage of men and elves, and also Maia through Melian, to decide whether they and their descendants, whether they would belong to the race of elves or men. Now, we know that Elrond obviously chose to be an elf. That's why he's around as an elf in the Third Age during Lord of the Rings. And Elros, his brother, chose to be human, and then he became the first king of Numenor. And the Numenorians were granted these longer lifespans than most humans. So Elros himself lived to be 500. And this trait runs through the descendants of the Numenorians, this longer than normal lifespan. Now, what happened to Numenor is in another episode entirely, but the short version is that the Numenorians royally screwed up, pun intended, and under the influence of Sauron, they challenged the Valar to war. And this went about as badly as it could have. And the end result was that the island of Numenor sunk beneath the waves, and Arda, which is the world, which had been flat before this, was turned into a sphere, and Valinor was removed from it, so that no one could physically sail to Valinor unless the Valar specifically allowed them to. That's where the elves go at the end of the Third Age, when, you know, the ring bearers of the elves leave across the sea. They're actually, like, getting picked up by the Valar. The Valar allowing them to take what's called the straight path. So they don't curve with the world. They just keep going straight. And Valinor is, like, floating out beyond in the ether. And you can get there if the Valar allow you to. Now, when this all happened, when Numenor was sunk and the earth was curved and became a sphere, there were some Numenoreans that were living in Middle-earth at the time. They mostly were evil. They followed Sauron for a lot of them. And the only other Numenoreans who survived were the people of Elendil. And he survived because he refused the king's summons to go to war against the Valar. And basically, he and his people, they rode this tidal wave to the shores of Middle-earth. And Elendil established the Kingdom of Arnor in the north of Middle-earth, which was near the lands of his friend, the High King of the Elves, Gil-galad. Or Gil-galad. There's a proper way to pronounce it. I kind of go back and forth because I didn't look it up. Anyway, he lives near Gil-galad in the north of Middle-earth. And Elendil's two sons, Isildur and Anarion, established the Kingdom of Gondor in the south, and they both co-ruled that from the capital city of Osgiliath. And technically, Elendil was the High King over both Arnor and Gondor. Now, if you've seen the movies, you know what happened next. The War of the Last Alliance, and the elves and men going to war against Sauron. And in that war, most of the leaders died. Gil-galad, Elendil, and Anarion were all slain, and Isildur cuts the ring from Sauron's hand, and Sauron is defeated. And in the aftermath of that war, Isildur left Gondor to claim the throne of his father Elendil in Arnor, and the rule of Gondor went to Isildur's nephew, Melendil. And the kings of Gondor descended from Melendil until the last king of Gondor, before Aragorn, Eärnor. And after that, the stewards ruled, which was Denethor's family, but they weren't royalty. They were Numenorean, but they were not royalty. They couldn't trace that descendant, their ancestry back to Elros. So the House of Anarion was in power in Gondor in a mostly unbroken line. There's like some nephews that get thrown in the mix when there were no sons of the kings and brief civil war, but they figured it out. It's a long genealogy, but the history of Gondor is relatively straightforward compared to the House of Isildur in Arnor. Now to start, Isildur never had a chance to take up his crown. On his journey north, he and his retinue, which included three of his sons, were attacked by orcs in what was known as the Disaster of the Gladden Fields. And they all died, and Sauron's ring was lost in the Anduin River as Isildur tried to swim away to safety. But this was not the end of the line of Isildur, because Isildur's wife had been sent to Rivendell at the beginning of the War of the Last Alliance because she was heavily pregnant, and Isildur wanted her to be safe. And so, in Rivendell, Isildur's youngest son, Valandil, at the time when Isildur died, Valandil was now 13 years old, he became the king of Arnor. And his line lasted for several generations until the reign of Eärendur. I'm telling you a lot of names. Click that link if you want to visually see all this. I'm just giving you the highlights here. And upon the death of Eärendur, his three sons fought over the throne of Arnor, and it was decided that the kingdom would be split into three separate kingdoms: Arthedain, Cardolan, and Rudar. Now, we're told that Rudar and Cardolan, the line of Isildur, fails in those kingdoms, and the kingdoms were led by others, most likely other Numenoreans, people of Numenorean descent, which, by the way, are also called the Dunedain. Numenorean, Dunedain mean basically the same thing. And for about 400 years, the three kingdoms of Arthedain, Cardolan, and Rudar lived side by side with occasional fighting between them, until the Witch King, which is the leader of the Nazgul, rose to power in the land of Angmar and began to attack the Dunedain in the north. Now, Rudar was conquered first, and a puppet king belonging to the Hillmen, which are the men that were living in the area that were not Dúnedain, a puppet king was put in control, and he worked directly for the Witch King of Angmar. And eventually, a combination of war and plague wiped out the remaining Dúnedain in Cardolan. And so Arthedain was the last remaining kingdom that had once belonged to Arnor. The rest have all been devastated or taken over by the Witch King. And the last king of Arthedain was named Arvedui, and he was of that line of Isildur. And he had married the daughter of the king of Gondor at the time, which, okay, it was technically his relative, but at this point, 1,900 years had passed. So they were as related as, like me and someone living in the area that used to be Prussia in modern day, right? It's so far distant in terms of when their genealogies diverge. It's cousins to the, 77th degree or something crazy. So basically they're not related, but they're technically related, but not in a gross way. At this point, it doesn't even factor in. So the king of Gondor, Anduhr, he dies in battle, and with him die both of his sons. And seeing that the kingdom of Arnor was reduced to a third of its size and enemies were closing in, Arvedui attempted to claim the throne of Gondor. In Appendix A of The Lord of the Rings, we're told this, and I'm going to read out a passage here. It says, "On the death of Anduhr and his sons, Arvedui of the North Kingdom claimed the crown of Gondor, as the direct descendant of Isildur, and as husband of Firiel, the only surviving child of Anduhr. The claim was rejected. In this, Pelennor, the steward of King Anduhr, played the chief part. The Council of Gondor answered, 'The crown and royalty of Gondor belongs solely to the heirs of Melendil, son of Anarion, to whom Isildur relinquished this realm. In Gondor, this heritage is reckoned through sons only, and we have not heard that the law is otherwise in Arnor.' Now, to this, Arvedui replied, 'Elendil had two sons, of whom Isildur was the elder and the heir of his father. We have heard that the name of Elendil stands to this day at the head of the line of the kings of Gondor, since he was accounted the high king of all the lands of the Dúnedain. While Elendil still lived, the conjoint rule in the south was committed to his sons. But when Elendil fell, Isildur departed to take up the high kingship of his father, and committed the rule of the south in like manner to the son of his brother. He did not relinquish his royalty in Gondor, nor intend that the realm of Elendil should be divided forever. Moreover, in Numenor of old, the scepter descended to the eldest child of the king, whether man or woman. It is true that the law has not been observed in the lands of exile ever troubled by war, but such was the law of our people to which we now refer, seeing that the sons of Anduhr died childless.' And to this Gondor made no answer." So they just leave him on red. And they instead give the kingship to Eärnil, who's a victorious military leader and a relative of Anduhr from a separate branch of the royal line. And Arthedain, the kingdom, the last remaining vestige of Arnor in the north, Arthedain falls shortly after this. And Arvedui dies when a blizzard hits his ship as he's trying to sail to safety. He had been driven to the far north, and he was living with these people called the Snowmen of Forashil. It's a whole thing. But he dies when his ship goes down during a blizzard. And with his kingdom gone, his heir was not the king. He became the chief of the Dúnedain. And the kingdom of Angmar would eventually be overthrown, actually not that long afterwards, by the elves of Lindon, the elves of Rivendell, and an army that came up from Gondor, led by Eärnor, the son of Eärnil. But the devastation at what had once been in Arnor was so complete, and the lands were essentially empty, and the Dúnedain of the north became the Rangers, fighting orcs, trolls, and evil men wherever they found them, hiding in the shadows. And it would become a custom for the heir of the chief of the Dúnedain to live in Rivendell during their childhood. Now, coincidentally, Eärnur, the guy who just defeated the Witch King, kind of, he would be the last king of Gondor. When he went to face the Witch King in single combat, because the Witch King had showed up in the south and had captured what was called Minas Ithil. It became Minas Morgul. You see it in the film. It's right by the stairs that Frodo and Sam and Gollum climb up. That's Minas Morgul. The Witch King, after being defeated in Angmar, went down to the south and took over that. And Aarnur says, I'm going to challenge him to single-hand combat. And he gets captured and gets taken into Minas Morgul, and he's never seen again. And at that point, the stewards would rule. And Tolkien tells us in the appendices, each new steward indeed took office with the oath to hold rod and rule in the name of the king until he shall return. But these soon became words of ritual little heeded, for the stewards exercised all the power of the kings. Yet many in Gondor still believed that a king would indeed return in some time to come. And some remembered the ancient line of the north, which was rumored still lived on in the shadows. But against such thoughts, the ruling stewards hardened their hearts. And so that's why Aragorn and his family are not already king. His people had been diminished, they had lost their kingdom, both the larger kingdom of Arnor and the smaller kingdom of Arthedain. And the steward and the nobles in Gondor didn't want them to come in. But obviously this all changes for Aragorn. So what happens here? Well, Aragorn's father, Arathorn, was the chief of the Dunedain, and as was the custom, Aragorn was being fostered in Rivendell. And Arathorn was out on a mission with the twin sons of Elrond, Eladan and Elrohir. They were out hunting orcs, when he took an orc arrow to the eye and died, very young for one of the Dunedain, at about the age of 60. And so at the age of 2, Aragorn became the chief of the Dunedain, and Elrond raised him at Rivendell. But because Elrond, and as Tolkien called the Wise, so that's going to be people like Gandalf, Galadriel, Glorfindel, Elrond, Saruman, sometimes, they all sensed that Sauron was growing in power. And they knew that he was searching for the lost heir of Isildur, trying to determine if that heir was still alive. Because there was already no king in Gondor, and if he could destroy the heir of Isildur in the north, then his greatest enemies would be defeated. Sauron remembered the ring being cut off of his finger, and he had this special hatred of Numenoreans, possibly more than his hatred of the elves. So Aragorn wasn't taught about his lineage, and he wasn't even told his real name. He was given the name Estel, which is Elvish for hope. He was still trained as one of the Dunedain, and when he was 20, he was returning to Rivendell with the sons of Elrond after doing great deeds, as Tolkien describes it. And Elrond decided the time was right to reveal to him his lineage and his real name. And he also gave Aragorn heirlooms of the House of Isildur, which were the Ring of Barahir and the Shards of Narsil. Now, he doesn't yet give him the scepter of the King of Arnor, because Elrond says Aragorn hasn't earned it yet. Elrond has... in the books it's called foresight, which it's like prophecy light. It's not like the Oracle of Delphi saying, this is what's going to happen, but it's this sense of like, I have this sense about you that this is what's going to be. And he's very wise, and he gets a good sense of what's going to happen, and so he tells Aragorn that with these heirlooms, he will do great things, and that he will have a longer lifespan than most men, though not as long as some of his ancestors. And the very next day, Aragorn was walking through Rivendell, singing an elvish song about Beren and Lúthien. Now, Beren, just to give you a little background context here, Beren was a human in the First Age who fell in love with Lúthien, the daughter of King Thingol of Doriath. And I've talked about Thingol a lot in past episodes, so if this is your first episode, welcome. But go listen to the other ones to get caught up. So anyway, Aragorn was singing part of this song when Beren first saw Lúthien in the song, and Beren cries out, Tinuviel, which was Elvish for Nightingale, or Daughter of Twilight, because he saw her at twilight and he didn't know what her name was, so he just yells out, Tinuviel. And at that moment in the song, Aragorn saw Arwen walking near to him, and he was immediately in love. And not knowing her name, he, like Beren, called out, Tinuviel, which Arwen thought was funny. She's like, that's weird, why are you calling me that? And they introduced themselves, and Aragorn realized, oh my gosh, this is Elrond's daughter, who had only recently arrived from Lothlorien because she had been living there for the past, like, half century or so. So Aragorn is immediately in love, and he's wearing it on his face. Everybody could tell something's wrong with that Aragorn. And Elrond picks up on it, and he has, it's one of the more awkward, hey, can I date your daughter talks that has ever existed in history. Elrond basically says, no, you're a human, she's an elf, that ain't happening. Because Aragorn was mortal, one day he's going to die, while Arwen would one day pass over the seas with Elrond and his people and return to Valinor. In addition, Elrond's foresight saw that, and this is from the appendices, I'm going to quote it again, he says, Aragorn, Arathorn's son, Lord of the Dunedain, listen to me. A great doom awaits you, either to rise above the height of your fathers since the days of Elendil, or to fall into darkness with all that is left of your kin. Many years of trial lie before you. You shall neither have wife nor bind any woman to you in troth until your time comes and you are found worthy of it. Now, this seems awfully convenient for Elrond, but sure, Aragorn says, fine, I'm going to go do the great deeds. But Aragorn also had a bit of foresight in him as well. And he said it wouldn't be the choice of Elrond what's going to happen. It would be the choice of Elrond's children to decide where they wanted to go, just as Elrond had chosen to belong with the elves the many thousands of years before. And they kind of just let the matter drop. And at that point, Aragorn really threw himself into fighting the forces of Sauron. We're told he meets Gandalf, and he travels to the south to see the kingdoms of Rohan and Gondor. He fights in their armies, he leads troops to victory in battles, and he makes Denethor extremely jealous. Again, episode 2, give it a listen, we talk about that in more detail there. But afterwards, we're told that he goes far into the east and the deep south, beyond the edges of the map that we even see in Lord of the Rings. And he didn't return to the north until he was 49. On his way back, he stops in Lothlorien. And there, Arwen was visiting Galadriel, who was her grandmother. And Galadriel made Aragorn cleaned up, and he puts him in fancy clothing. And I don't know if she's doing like a matchmaker thing, but Arwen sees him all dressed up, not as a ranger, but dressed as a king. The book says he looks more like an elf lord of the West in the prime of his life. And she fell in love with him on the spot. And Tolkien, he wrote it this way. And thus it was that Arwen first beheld him again after their long parting. And as he came walking towards her under the trees of Keras Galadhon, laden with flowers of gold, her choice was made and her doom appointed. And I'm sorry if I messed up the pronunciation of Keras Galadhon. I never learned how to speak Elvish. Apologies. And then Tolkien continues with this. He says, then for a season they wandered together in the glades of Lothlorien, until it was time for him to depart. And on the evening of midsummer, Aragorn, Arathorn's son, and Arwen, daughter of Elrond, went to the fair hill, Cairn Amroth, in the midst of the land. And they walked unshod on the undying grass with Elenor and Nifredel about their feet. And there upon that hill they looked east to the shadow and west to the twilight, and they plighted their troth and were glad. Now when Elrond learns about this, he is devastated, because this choice of Arwen's means that they're going to be forever separated, because she just chose to become mortal and die, while he would go and live in Valinor forever. And Elrond told Aragorn that if he was going to consent to this, Aragorn would need to achieve a feat just as daunting as Beren, because Thingol had sent Beren on a quest. He said you could only marry Lúthien if you retrieve a Silmaril from the crown of Morgoth, which he did, though arguably Lúthien did most of the work, which is, again, a story for another time. But there are no more Silmarils left in the world, so Elrond told Aragorn that he could only wed Arwen if he became king not only of the kingdom of Arnor, which didn't exist anymore, but of Gondor as well, which didn't want the ruling powers didn't want the king to return. So he had to be the king of both Arnor and Gondor, which no king had been since the days of Elendil. And it's only then, in Aragorn's life, he begins working towards becoming the king. It's why he's so eager to do so in the books. And there was no clear path for how to do this. If he just went to Gondor, Denethor would have rejected his claim, especially with this personal beef that he already had with Aragorn. So he redoubles his rangering in the north. He's seeking out ways to thwart the rising power of Sauron. It's after this point that Gandalf sends him out to try to track down Gollum, a task that takes nearly a decade, I think. It's only the convergence of events with Frodo in the ring that finally gets him returning to Gondor. And honestly, if Denethor hadn't self-immolated, he might not have been able to return to Gondor and reclaim the throne. Denethor may have just blocked the whole thing. So why did it take him so long to become king? Well, because the line of Isildur lost power and authority, and Aragorn didn't have a desire to become king for more than half his life up to that point. It was only after it became a prerequisite to marrying Arwen that he even wanted it, and there were no prior opportunities to attempt it. Now, I want to end by comparing movie and book Aragorn's motivations. In the movies, it's very clear that Aragorn is reluctant to become the king. His only motivation is to try to help Frodo, until the moment of Boromir's death, which is when he decides, I'm going to go to Gondor. In the books, it's very clear. His plan is he's gonna go to Gondor. The only thing that's holding him back is that he's torn about whether he should go with Frodo or not, because Gandalf, when he falls in Moria, Aragorn becomes the leader. But Aragorn's plan in the books was always, I'll go with you guys until Gandalf takes Frodo off that way, and me and Boromir were going to go to Gondor. So when Frodo and Sam take off on their own, he's almost relieved that he can go after Merry and Pippin in the books, and their path, because it's heading back in the direction of Gondor. Now, I think the reason for this being so different in the books and the movies is because it's just too difficult to fit all of that background for his motivations in the film. I mean, look at how long it has taken me to get all of those details of Aragorn's lineage and him meeting Arwen and their history. Tolkien couldn't even fit it in the main story. Pretty much everything I told you came from Appendix A of The Return of the King. And these movies, they're already long, so Peter Jackson, Fran Walsh, and Philippa Boyens needed to give us something else for his motivation, something we could easily latch onto and place on one of our heroes of the story. And the reluctant king is a common trope throughout literature and film. And it kind of makes Aragorn more of an everyman. Now, I love book Aragorn. I think he's a masterful depiction of non-toxic masculinity. He's strong and emotional. He cares for people. He cries with his friends. He's tender. But he's never, like, macho or aggressive. He defends those who need defending. Right? He's just a great guy. He's, like, the whole package. But the fantasy trope, which, to be fair, Aragorn sort of started, of the lost king restoring his bloodline, can at times be a bit at odds with our 21st century sensibilities. It's a throwback to the divine right of kings that actively works against egalitarianism and democracy. Now granted, it's still the case in the movies, but by showing him reluctant versus the gung-ho, this is my right as heir of Isildur, it softens that a little bit. And I think both have their merits. I think book Aragorn is perfect for the books. And I think Viggo Mortensen's depiction is perfect for the movies. Different types of media require different approaches sometimes, and both can be good. So there you go, Lydia. I hope that answered your question. And if you, like Lydia, would like to submit a question, you can email it to lotramapod@gmail.com, and I'll do my best to answer it. And if you've been enjoying this show, could you do me just a huge favor? Just scroll down a little bit on your phone and leave me a 5-star rating and review. It really does help just get this thing moving in the algorithm. And the more people who can see this, might be more people who listen to this, which means that I'm going to get more questions, and that means we get to have more episodes. So leave a review, tell a friend, download it on those, like, the showroom phones at Best Buy, all of the stuff that can just get it out there and moving in the interwebs. Follow me on Instagram and Threads. Links for both are in the show notes. Thank you, as always, to Michael for our music and Lauren for our artwork. And that's all for this week. Iluvatar willing, I'll be back next week. See you then.